Hello and welcome to the 2009 Full Frontal Podcast.
Being the first speaker is always a problem. I always feel terribly sorry for the first person that speaks on the second day of Ad Media because everybody has been drinking the first night. And seeing that I met some of you in the pub yesterday, and I know that's a fact as well. So my first presentation won't be as technical as the other ones, but I will give you a bit of an idea of what we do wrong in JavaScript, what can be done in JavaScript that you probably don't know about yet, and a hint at what at the other things that people will be talking about today to give you a bit of an easy start of the day. So let's take a quick look back in time when JavaScript came around and when I first was introduced to it. So when I started web development, there were not many browsers around that really made a lot of sense. So Netscape Navigator was my first one installed from floppy disks, and we didn't have much JavaScript to play with. We had like the window object, we had status bar, we had the images array, we had the links array, we had the forms and elements array, and basically that was it. And when you wanted to create something, we had to use document write. So who else here had to write like a whole navigation of like dropdowns with document write? And I hope we never ever have to do that crap again. But sadly enough, these scripts are still out on the web and people still use them and people still think this is JavaScript. It is JavaScript, but it's something we shouldn't be using anymore. So having this like only little subset of JavaScript to play with didn't stop us from doing really stupid things with it. Because the first thing that JavaScript did was like extend the CGI or HTML or sending pages back and forth to something else. So we did like validation scripts, which was a good idea. We did calculators, which was a good idea. We did status bar scrollers, which was less of a good idea. We did like form field scrollers, which was even less of a good idea. And we did things like popping up windows and writing frame sets dynamically into windows, and it was just a pain. And over the years, more and more of these things became abused. That's why nowadays, when you do a pop-up window, you can't stop the location bar anymore. And people complain about this. The reason is if I make a pop-up window, and I could do it with an injected script, I don't know if that's really from your page or if it's a form that sends my credit card data details somewhere else. So we had other browsers coming around, Internet Explorer 4, Netscape Communicator, and this is when all of our scripts started, if document all, else if document layers. And we basically copied our script twice to actually talk to one browser only. And this is, luckily enough, over. We wouldn't just do one thing for only one browser, not like CSS transitions or something like that. So we had access out of a sudden to something that was more useful. We can actually create content, we can access layers, we can do a document all and get access to something. And then we could color scroll bars and do like rainbow color scroll bars and these kind of things. It was great. It was like JavaScript was fun to do, and it was most of the time we used it for like really, really pointless things. And then more browsers came around, and we did even more bling. So Netscape 6 was the first one to support, Opera did, but Netscape 6 was the first one that I used that had the proper document object model that I can actually build things with. And people hated it for it because all of the old scripts didn't work. So a browser did something right, and people had written such bad code for years that they blamed the browser for it. And then we had Internet Explorer 6, which sadly enough is still around. One of the things that I remember back from those days, it was this GeoCities watermark that was always posted up on the right-hand side or down the bottom. And when you scrolled the page, it was like flickering like hell. And then everybody had to have this script. This was the coolest shit ever. Like every marketing department, oh, we have to have a watermark on our page. And this was the code. It's just terrible that we did these kind of things. And then Ajax came around, and Ajax was the big revolution, and people out of a sudden said, JavaScript makes sense anymore. After we annoyed people to no end with these watermarks and pop-up windows and frame sets that nobody needs, Ajax out of a sudden made JavaScript an interesting concept again, and people had to know it. It was quite funny when on your CV when you had like, I'm a JavaScript developer, and people were like, come on, you could do better than that. And then out of a sudden Ajax came around, I'm an Ajax developer. Like, oh, awesome, can you do Ajax in color, and can you do Ajax in this? So people were confused what Ajax really was. So, I mean, there's a football club in the Netherlands, it's the Greek guy, it's the horse of Atreyu in the Neverending Story, and it's the war rocket of whatever his name was. And people thought everything was Ajax out of a sudden. Everything had to be Ajax. Everything loaded content and sent forms without really telling you that it sent forms. So the interaction model was there. People used Ajax, but we didn't quite do the usability of Ajax yet. And this is still the case. And the problem is that people used Ajax for content that was not supposed to be loaded with something like JavaScript, like credit card details, like users' passwords. These kind of things people sent over Ajax because it was possible, not realizing that it's totally possible to interject this code and do something and read it without having the right to actually get it. So security scares came around. Everybody said, like, oh, Ajax is insecure, and JavaScript is insecure, and there's a problem with JavaScript. If you use JavaScript, your site will be hacked. And the real point was, if you use JavaScript stupidly, your site will be hacked because you're using information in an environment that is not protected. But that didn't matter. It's like JavaScript is evil, and we have to find a way to make it work. And that's still around. JavaScript gets a lot of blame. So the question was, is JavaScript not to be trusted? So is it a Lando that basically is great, is a nice friend, but if the environment is different, then you can't trust it anymore? And that is always the question, like, can I turn on JavaScript and will I be secure? Can I write secure JavaScript? And the point is, yes, you can. The question is, like, how do you really use JavaScript? So the company Sensic released an interesting paper, white paper, about the web vulnerabilities of the Q1 and 2 in 2009. And when we look at what came out of that, then we see that, like, 25% of the whole problem is SQL injection. And that cracks me up. I mean, nowadays, people still don't filter out their SQL calls. I mean, this is one line of PHP or Java or Python or whatever it is. But this is still one of the biggest security problems that we have. Cross-site scripting is the next one. And cross-site scripting is a JavaScript problem. Yes, you can inject JavaScript, and then you can do all kinds of things. But first and foremost, it's a back-end problem. It's an issue that basically you don't filter out the content that comes in your .get variables, in your data that gets in, and then people blame JavaScript. It's like they write bad PHP and then say JavaScript is the security problem. The other interesting thing is that the browsers actually here only amount to 8% of the security problems. And people always say browsers are the biggest issues. Browsers are one of the big issues, but there's lots more to security that we do wrong, but we always blame it on JavaScript because it's easy to blame because we don't stand up as JavaScript developers and say, like, actually, if you had written your PHP the right way, my JavaScript could not be abused. But this is something that people just don't do. We don't stand up because JavaScript is still seen as something that everybody can do. Like, the designer starts writing some JavaScript, the back-end guy writes some JavaScript, HTML front-end guys write some JavaScript. Everybody can do it. It's the village bicycle, basically. So when we always judge the quality of JavaScript by its implementation, everybody says, like, JavaScript is insecure, JavaScript is not really working on computers, and it's a bad language, because we look at how browsers implement JavaScript. And that's like judging a book by the movie, because it's the browser's problem and the browser implementation of JavaScript and the browser way of accessing content that it shouldn't allow you to access. But we say JavaScript is the problem instead of just the browser implementation of it, because the language itself is okay. The language itself is not inherently insecure. Yes, global variables are a shit idea, and we should get rid of them, but right now, this is what we have, and it's not a bad language to play with. And it's a language that can easily teach somebody. It's a language that's easy to learn, hard to master, but most of the time, we don't go to the master page anyways because, say, JavaScript, it's not really reliable because this and that. And then when you ask people, like, what's the problem with JavaScript? Well, Internet Explorer does this, and Firefox does this. And you're like, well, that's a browser problem. That's not really a JavaScript problem. So don't judge the language by its implementation. The problem with JavaScript is that JavaScript is treated by browsers equally. It doesn't matter where it comes from. So the JavaScript that you put in your page has the same right to everything on the page than the ad that is on the page, or the counter script that's on the page, or something your provider puts at the end of it, or something your firewall software puts at the end of every HTML document. So whatever code you have in your page has full rights to everything that's going on in that document and has full rights to other things other JavaScripts have said. And that's just very, very scary, especially right now when, recession, well, it's getting better, actually, but imagine, like, an ad provider that showed you ads being bought by a spamming company and not telling anybody. they can inject JavaScript into any page out there because people were greedy and wanted to get some quick money with some dodgy ads. But nowadays, I can buy this company, don't tell anybody, and basically keep the code in there and steal everything that goes on the page. And stealing cookies is the biggest problem because it's always when you do like JavaScript security talks and you see people like, oh, look, I can make an alert pop up on your page. You're like, oh, yeah, great. But really, what I can do if I can inject JavaScript, I can read your session cookies, I can read the content on your page, I can simulate your users. I can steal their identity, I can log in as them, I can spam their friends from their account, and this is the biggest problem. So cookies are a big security problem. When you use them in JavaScript, immensely so. So, funny enough, when people start bitching about browsers, then Internet Explorer 6 is always our favorite goal. Target, but that's, yeah, it deserves it, really. But what was interesting about this survey was the security, which was the most insecure browser? What do you guess? 44% was Firefox, 15% was Internet Explorer, and 35% was Safari. Opera had 6% only. So Opera is a really secure browser, but I guess it's partly because of the market share. If Opera would be the number one browser, it would look a bit different. Opera is being used in Russia and China a lot, so I guess it has to be secure. But it's quite interesting to see that Firefox and Safari were this big, because these are our favorite browsers. These are the cool browsers. Internet Explorer shouldn't play with them out in the garden. It's like, these are the cool kids. And the security problems that they have is because of their architecture. Safari was targeted by attackers because of the iPhone. As soon as there's a platform that's like really, really cool, people will target it and will find security flaws and will play with it. So people try to hack the iPhones, they try to attack Safari. So security flaws come up in Safari, easily enough. Funny enough as well that only like jailbroken iPhones get like viruses and you're like, huh, who sponsored that? And Firefox has a problem, it's the plugin architecture. The plugin architecture of Firefox is its success. It's the coolest thing about it. You can do any extension that you can put in there. But it also means that like the security flaws were all plugins, not the engine itself. Security flaws came through third-party people not writing proper code. And that always happens when you write something and allow people to extend it, and you don't have a proper triage in terms of security, what's going on there. And that's been historically always a problem with JavaScript and browsers as well. Like PDF, Flash in Internet Explorer was always a big security problem. Like in Yahoo, for example, we are not allowed to show any PDF, directly linked to any PDF on a document because of the security problems that Internet Explorer 6 has with it if it's unpatched. And I never understood this anyways. Like when I click on a PDF, I don't want it open in the browser. I don't want to go away from that page. I want to download the PDF. It's a document. So a best way of dealing with that is actually loop all your PDFs through a download script that sets the header that forces people to download them, and then you can also put a counter script on it, for example. So plugins are a big security issue. So no more JavaScript. Like, that's what most people say. Like, oh, JavaScript is evil, so it's insecure, so let's turn off JavaScript, let's not use JavaScript. And Simon Willis, at the end of the day, will talk a lot about NoScript and how to use it. And it's a very secure way of dealing with the web. But to me, it's a bit of a problem because I want to talk about the joy of JavaScript. JavaScript is a wonderful thing, and it makes our interfaces much more usable, much more happy, much easier to use. I love that nowadays I can go to a web client, and I can upload an attachment to an email, and I can start typing the email while the attachment is uploading. This is not wasting my time. Back in the days, I had to upload it, I had to wait 15 minutes till the upload was ended, and then I could write my email. Nowadays, I can do that at the same time, and it saves me time and makes it more flexible for me. I love Google Maps. I love things like Street View to see that I see see where I'm going. This could be done in Silverlight or in Flash as well, but actually JavaScript is a good technology for these kind of things. So the main thing that people forget is that learning JavaScript is a very, very important step. And nowadays, we get all these messages like, you don't need to learn JavaScript. Just use this library, 5 lines of code. You know JavaScript now. No, it's understanding where the language is coming from, understanding the constructs of it is a very important thing. And nowadays, we have the benefit that we have these things out there. We have the Opera Web Standards curriculum, which is a great collection of JavaScript articles written by a lot of people who are here today and give talks later on as well. And then we have the video series by Douglas Crockford that introduces you to the JavaScript language. So these are kind of things, when you get a new developer in, send them these things, give them a day to read through them, have a bit of a quiz at the end, and you will have a JavaScript developer. It's looking at other people's source code and copying and pasting and then trying to understand it is what we had to do in 1997. That's not necessary anymore. And it's not a pride thing, like, ooh, I learned from other people. Just read some good articles, read some good books. We have the information out there. And once you know JavaScript, you're also less likely to build insecure code. So what not to use JavaScript for is very important to make people to remind people of. Sensitive information should never be in JavaScript, credit card numbers, any real user data, because I can always interject this. I can see it in Firebug if necessary. I can write my own like little injection script and find out the information that way. Cookie handling containing session data, that's something that the server should do for me as well. Trying to protect content, like obfuscation of JavaScript, or right-click protection is my favorite, when you have like photographers, like, how can I stop people from downloading my photos? Put them on a memory stick and leave them in your desk. That's the only way how you can protect your photos. Otherwise, people will find a way to do a thing like a screenshot, for example. So your right-click script is just annoying. It's not helping. And another thing that people use Ajax for, which I always thought was useless, is that they replace the server or save on server traffic without having a fallback. Like, great, we're using Ajax now, so we're not paying a lot of money for our servers. Yeah, it also doesn't work on my BlackBerry. It doesn't work when there is a JavaScript error. And it really annoys the hell out of me that they expect me to have something just to see your website running. I mean, I'm using a lot of systems by a big company that creates databases. And sadly enough, they also think they know how to build interfaces. So one of the things is like it has drop-down menus that then via Ajax reload the page. They change a loading message and then they reload the page. So I'm typing in another form field and the page reloads. So people use this kind of like interactivity without really understanding that it should help me rather than be in my way. So what do you use JavaScript for? For slicker interfaces, autocomplete controls. I love them. I just love that I can type things in and I don't make a mistake because it gives me the options. Favorite when you go to America and you try to find the right state, Massachusetts, I always mistype. But with an autocomplete, MAS, Massachusetts, pick it done. Warning users about flawed entries, like password strength, for example. I think if you do a login system nowadays and you allow people to use the password, there should be a big a pop-up saying you're an idiot. Because we shouldn't allow people to build to make security problems out there by making it too easy for them. It's like the password strength stuff, for example, of Gmail and also of YouTube, I like that it tells me, like, this is probably a secure password, and please put more characters in, and I don't want to have a page reload for that. I want it while I type it in, I get the information. I'm like, okay, I use a different one right now and not Kirk or things like that. Extending the interface options of HTML to become an application language, like this is what we do with HTML5 right now, but actually with HTML4 we have to use JavaScript to do that. So for sliders, maps, compo boxes, these are things that HTML doesn't give us, but people expect to have in applications nowadays. So we use JavaScript and CSS to properly do that. And we make it stylable with CSS so people don't have to know JavaScript to change that slider, for example. And any visual effect that cannot be done safely with CSS. And that's animation, that's menus. I mean, CSS menus are fun, but they're not keyboard accessible, so to me they're not a menu. It's just JavaScript gives you the control over everything that you do. So if you do a menu, you can check if it will fit on the screen and if it pops out to the right before you show it, and if it doesn't, you show it to the left. You cannot do that in CSS. So it's a better way to use JavaScript for these kind of things. So what if you need more, though? That's a problem. I mean, we built the new Yahoo homepage, and one of the things we now allow people is build applications inside the Yahoo homepage. This thing has a lot of traffic. This thing has a lot of users, and we have, I think, 300 million users whose cookies we need to protect. So we had to find a way to allow people to write JavaScript and to be still secure and to actually make it easy for people to build applications without opening ourselves to total security flaws. So one way is to limit yourself. So this is AdSafe by Douglas Crockford, which basically defines a subset of JavaScript that you're allowed to use. And if you don't, then it basically will not work, which is great, but it means that people have to relearn things and people have to change their code, and we hate changing our code. The other way is to pre-process JavaScript with Kaha. And that was invented by Google, then taken on by MySpace, and now taken on by us as well. And we've been jumping in between the offices of Google and ours and made Kaha work. Kaha means that you pre-process HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and you filter out all the things that are nasty, and you create a package out of it that runs inside an own module. So you sandbox the whole little infrastructure of your widget in a secure manner. What it means also is that your JavaScript becomes completely unreadable, and it's really, when you do it on the client side, it can become really slow. So there was a lot of problems with it. But it's right now the only safe way to actually do something in a browser and keep it like sandboxed, unless browsers give us sandboxes like Chrome starts doing, another browser should follow with. So what it means that if you want to write Kaha-compliant HTML, which you have to do for these applications is now, that you cannot use some things. You cannot use name attributes. You cannot use custom attributes. You cannot use custom tags. You cannot use unclosed tags. You cannot use embed because of the security problems with Internet Explorer. You cannot use iframe for obvious reasons. So if I make a really secure environment and then I allow you to install anything with an iframe, that wouldn't work out. You cannot use link rel because that could be hijacked as well. You cannot use JavaScript void zero because I come and hit you if you do. I mean, this whenever I see JavaScript void zero, I know that somebody touched JavaScript who doesn't want to understand it or shouldn't understand it. Because if you write a link that doesn't do anything if you click on it and then put a event handler on it, you just made something that is JavaScript dependable, so you should have created that whole link with JavaScript. And then you don't need JavaScript void zero. Radio buttons in IE, I don't know what that was about, but relative URLs is another problem because they could be redirected to read you, et cetera, password instead of just your link. Kaha in JavaScript, you are not allowed to use eval for obvious reasons. You cannot use new function. You cannot use strings as event handlers, so you cannot do an onclick. You cannot use names ending with double and triple underscores. And I was like, why the hell would I ever want to do this? The reason is that Kaha, the code that Kaha creates from your JavaScript, uses underscores at the end. So that would clash with their namespace. That's why you can't use it. You cannot use the with function, which is actually a good thing as well, because the memory consumption of the with function is terrible. You cannot use implicit global variables. You have to specify a var variable, which is just easy, real JavaScript writing, rather than just hoping that nobody else has the same global variable name. You cannot call a method as a function. You cannot use document write because, again, I will come and hit you. You cannot use window event. You have to use a proper DOM event for that. And you cannot do AJAX requests returning JS. I keep seeing that people do AJAX requests, return JS, and then run an eval over it. Why? Just do a script node link to that JavaScript. It's like a very, very strange way of dealing with it. Kaha and CSS doesn't allow for star hacks and underscore hacks for the main reason that they're purists and they don't allow hacks that actually rely on things in the browser going wrong. You cannot use IE conditionals for the same reason. You cannot use an insert after clear fix because of the generated content. So you cannot use generated content at all because I could inject something in there. You cannot use expression because once again I will come and hit you. Because it always cracks me up when people do CSS-only drop shadow solutions and then they use expression in Internet Explorer. Expression is not CSS. It allows you to run JavaScript inside CSS. So it's a JavaScript solution, really. It's not a CSS-only solution. And you cannot use add import because you could inject any code there as well. A lot of these things are not really JavaScript security problems. A lot of these things have just been put in because people are very adamant about making it secure and had written bad code in the past. When you talk to security experts about like JavaScript security, you always get these false positives. Like on one of our mailing lists, the paranoid team is our security team. They're like, inline styles are now not allowed anymore because they're a security problem. And I'm like, yes, but why? And they're like, well, if you write in PHP a variable out in an inline style, you could use that for XSS. And you're like, well, that's not an inline embed style problem. That's a PHP problem again. But good, because I don't like inline styles, because it makes it hard to maintain. So we've put a lot of Kaha-ready code examples together that allows you to actually realize how to write JavaScript. And a lot of it is really not that new. A lot of it is just basically nice and clean HTML JavaScript to work with. So how can you make this easier? Because I don't want to understand what can't be done, and I don't want to understand what should be done in Kaha. And one way of dealing with this is, like with anything with JavaScript right now, is libraries. Libraries make browsers not suck. This is what libraries do, and this is what we should use them for. We shouldn't do fanboy fights like you use jQuery, you use Dodra, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. You use YUI, you use whatever else. But libraries are there to fix the problem of browsers until browsers are good. And this is, might be an infinite time, but at the same time, it allows us to write code now that works. If you look at YUI 3 or you look at jQuery, you can use the W3C standards as they were meant to be used, but you don't have to worry that the browser doesn't do it right. And what we did now, because we had to use it on our front page, is that we made YUI 2.8.0 Caja compliant. So you can write YUI code, and it will be Caja compliant without you worrying about these kind of limitations that you have. In the HTML, you still have them. In the CSS, you still have them. But in the JavaScript itself, and when you use the YUI CSS, then you don't have that problem. And I talked to John Resig when we were in Amsterdam, and he's looking into making jQuery as well, as soon as people start requesting it. So that's another one of those chicken and egg problems. Do we need secure JavaScript? Yes, we do. Do you want to use Caja? No, I don't. So somebody should do something about this was always my favorite answer for these kind of things. Like, yeah, look at it now, see what you can do with it, and then we can make it easier. Then we can make libraries to allow you to using it. The other thing that we did was we created a markup language to abstract the pain from you so you don't even need to use JavaScript, but you have JavaScript functionality that works for you. So you have, for example, YMLA is a JavaScript is a link that does an AJAX request for you, and you can give it a target ID, and the target ID will get the content of that AJAX request. And that's all Caja compliant. That's all secured, piped through our servers, and it's not a problem at all whatsoever. YML form, same thing. It takes a form. It serializes all the fields for you, does an AJAX request, get the data back, and so on and so forth. YML Swift, embed Swift without the embed problems in Internet Explorer, so you don't need to use Swift object or anything like that. It's automatically built in for you. And that's the kind of stuff that we had to do to make it easy for us and make it easy for other people to build things. You don't have to go through these pains, but in the end, I don't want to think about it. I just want to have secure applications, and this is a way of doing it. The other thing to think about JavaScript is that we can extend browsers to do other things that they're not doing at the moment. And this is when you can use JavaScript to write proper applications like Mozilla Chatpack, GreaseMonkey, Google Gears, Chrome, Browser Plus, Mozilla Labs, Geode. All these things allow me to do things with the browser that it wasn't necessarily meant for, but people would love to do right now. Browser Plus, for example, the other day had a really, really cool new feature, which is client-side packing. So I can drag and drop a file from the desktop into the browser, and it packs it in the browser before it starts an upload. So when I have a 16 meg image file, for example, I drag it into the browser for uploading on an upload button, and it packs it down to like 4 meg, and my upload is a lot faster out of a sudden. And I don't even have to worry about it. It just does it in the background for me. And that's the kind of functionality that I love to write from time to time, where I see JavaScript doesn't have to be limited by what browsers can do. But if a good extension gives me a good API to build things that the browser wasn't meant for, then I have a chance to play with these kind of things. And we keep moving out of the browser. That's the other thing. I mean, like, these little applications that run inside the Yahoo homepage, for example, or in Facebook, or in Open Social, or in the Google homepage, or personal Google homepage, these are all JavaScripts that actually run inside that framework. They run in a browser subsequently, but originally you have access to the API of that framework. So you can use the social graph of Google and of ours in JavaScript because you're inside that sandbox. These are the TV widgets that we just released in America and coming here as well. So I can write JavaScript, HTML, and CSS to have a widget on my television. How cool is that? It's not new technologies. Our web technologies are so flexible that we can use them in any environment. They're so easy to learn that anybody can become a good developer. If we just liberate our mind away from the, oh, JavaScript is evil because browsers do it wrong. These are widgets on the mobile phone that actually are written in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript as well. And this is what PPK will talk about later, and these are the W3C widgets, which basically is just a way of packing an application together. You write CSS, HTML, and JavaScript. You pack it up as a zip. You give it a config file, a manifest file that tells you what the application name is, what it should access, what its security level is. And then a runtime on the mobile phone actually executes this stuff in a more secure manner than the browser would do. And this is wonderful that nowadays I can write CSS, JavaScript, and HTML and write things for a mobile phone without having to go through the pains of downloading an SDK, learning Symbian or other languages. And it's just out there already. All of these things can be done. I've been with Vodafone in Germany for a conference where I talked about mashing up the web and building little widgets. And I built a demo widget for this application to show people. It was a competition. So here's what a widget could be like. Build something like this. Then I got home and like, okay, why don't I just put a logo on it and put it inside the competition just for fun and laughs and giggles. And out of a sudden, I've got a new mobile phone and a laptop because I won the weekly competition. And anybody in here can do this. If you just open your eyes and say, like, who needs HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and CSS? In which environments? What can I build? And you can become much more than just the HTML guy that builds websites. AIR is another way of liberating your JavaScript out because it allows you file access, it allows you encrypted storage, it allows you basically to write a Twitter client that other people can't hijack. I wouldn't use Twitter in a browser, but I happily use it inside Twirl. The other thing that people start using is JavaScript on the command line. So Rhino is a Java engine that runs JavaScript on the command line, so I can write scripts that run on the server in JavaScript. This is not like Google Web Toolkit where Java developers write JavaScript, but it's basically for JavaScript developers to do some server-side cool stuff with JavaScript. And one of the things that I'm doing with this is that I've written JavaScript mashups for years, and I always had the problem, like, if JavaScript is turned off, this thing will not work. So we always had to write a PHP fallback, and I didn't want to do this anymore. I was tired of, like, writing a PHP and a JavaScript for the same cause. So what I'm using nowadays is a system we call YQL, which is a mashup language that we created for all of our APIs and now open it to the world for all APIs. So I can select star from web service where conditions. And then I get the data back in any way I want to. So you can mash up data in a SQL-style syntax. You can filter down to the absolutely necessary data. That's very important in the JavaScript world. Most of the time, we just pull an XML file, and then we plow through these 3 megs of XML trying to find the one thing that we need. Why don't we filter that beforehand before we send it to the server, to the client? You can return as XML, as JSON, as JSONP, and JSONPX, which is a new format that we came up with. You can use Yahoo as a high-speed proxy to retrieve data from various sources. So if you do a request that's like 50 different APIs, you can use the 50 different APIs from your own server, or you can use Yahoo server, which probably is faster on the web and gives it back to you in a cached manner. And you can use it as a rate-limiting and caching proxy when you provide data. So, for example, select star from HTML where URL is HTTP, fullfrontal.org, and XPath is H3. Will give me all the H3s on the full frontal homepage. And that one is, as a web service, I can get this data back in different formats. I can get it back as XML, which is easy to read, but I always thought it was a pain to use in JavaScript. I can use it as a JSON, which is cool in JavaScript because it's native. But the problem is, if you look at here, you're like, all the attributes become properties, and the children become properties, so it's putting the HTML together after that is a pain to actually make work. So I have to write a lot of looping, or I have to write a library to actually do that for me. Then you have the JSONP output format, which originally Simon wanted to talk about, but now he's rewritten his talk, which basically is you wrap it in a JavaScript function, and you get the data back, and then it calls this function, and you get the data immediately. So you don't have to do any conversion. You don't have to do any AJAX call. You can use that in a script node. You can use it in a generated script node, and that's easy as that. And JSONPX is a format that we came up with that does exactly the same thing, but what it does instead of giving you a JSON object back is just it gives you a string back of the whole HTML. So you can inner HTML that string out without having to use JavaScript to put it together into HTML again. So say, for example, you want to get photos of London, UK, and you're using 3 different APIs for that. So you select the Where on Earth ID from GeoPlaces where text is London. That gives you a Where on Earth ID. Then you select the ID from Flickr Photo Search where on Earth ID in the other statement. So this one finds London, then this finds 20 photos taken in London. And then you say, like, select farm, ID secret, owner real name, search, title, blah, from Flickr Photos Info where photo ID in the other one. So this one gives me now photos back from London, and I know for a fact that they've been taken in London because I did a geo lookup rather than just hoping that London will give me London, because it could be Jack London. In Paris, it could be Paris Hilton. You don't want to show that. You select the output format JSON, you define a callback copy, and paste the URL. So in the console, in the end, you will get this query Yahoo APIs, and it will do the URL encoding and everything for you. You can pop this in a browser. It will show up as a JSONP object, and you're fine. And you can put it in a script node down here. And then all you have to do to display some photos is a bit of JavaScript, in this case, just an inner HTML thing. I could have done DOM scripting, but then it wouldn't have fit the screen. And this is all you have to do to show some cool photos of Flickr from London and profit. So you got your startup right here, and it's wonderful. Then turn this into a web service. Because my problem with it now, I show photos with JavaScript, and JavaScript is off. I don't have a photo site, which is I would have to rewrite the thing in PHP, and then I have to do the same assembling of the Flickr photo URL, which is not that easy because where's the secret going, where's the farm going, where's the ID going, and so on and so forth. So by using open tables, which is more or less an XML schema, in MySQL, you can actually embed JavaScript that gets run on the Yahoo servers for you. And that uses Rhino, and this has full E4X support. So I can turn any of my JavaScript mashups that I've done that don't use too much DOM scripting and don't use browser-only things, and I can turn them into a web service by embedding them into a little XML document. And in this case, I've done this execute block here, which is only part of the whole XML structure. So I say I have an amount, and if it is not a set, then it's 10. Then I have the query that I showed earlier, which I just parameterized with the amount here, and with the then I check if there's location, and then I have the parameter of the location here, and then I have a search text, and I put it together. License equals 4 means that the photos that I'm showing from Flickr are Creative Commons, which is very, very important, because if you don't show if you show people's photos without asking them, they're going to be very miffed with you. Then I actually can start doing a query. So this one, YQuery, does a YQL query much like I would do in Perl or what other language that I do. And this is E4X. So instead of having to do a create element, instead of having to do a string and then stringify it back into an XML object, with E4X and on Rhino on the command line, and some browsers were trying to implement this as well, I can actually use XML natively, and it creates the objects automatically for me without having to think about it. So I then have a proper for each, which I don't have in a browser either. So I just say var car in xResultsPhoto, and then I create a list element, I create a link, I set the attribute of that link to the URL that the image has, I create a new image, I put the URL together of that image, I put an attribute of source, attribute of alt, I put the image inside the A, I put the A inside the LI, and I put the LI inside the UL that I create outside, and then I give the response object back. So every time you write an embedded JavaScript in YQL, this is the end. Like, you give an object back to response, and that will be the response of the web service that you call in the end. So what I'm doing here is I'm doing the same YQL statement that I've done before, but I take all the conversion stuff that I've done in JavaScript, and I put it inside YQL as well, so I don't have to think about it. I maintain it there, and when I want to use this now, I can say select star from Flickr photo list, where text is me, and location is UK, and amount is 20, because that's the three parameters that I defined. I then can display with JavaScript by just copying and pasting that thing in again, and all I have to do this time is get the element that I want to feed and do an inner HTML of the results. So I don't have to do any of the looping anymore. I don't have to do any of the conversion in JavaScript anymore. This is all done for me on the server. If I want to do it in PHP, I can do the same thing. I do a URL of the whole thing. I do a curl call, get the curl back, execute the curl, close it, and then I get rid of all the stuff that I don't want to have. Actually, don't need this, a copy and paste from another thing. So how about scraping HTML that needs post data in JavaScript? That was another thing that people wanted to do all the time, and with Ajax not allowing you to go to another server, you can actually do this now inside a system like YQL. So I can make any REST call inside YQL execute with the simple y.rest. And that one is full REST support, so it's not only get, post, it's also put, it's update, it's delete. All the things that you can do in HTTP is now available for you in JavaScript. You then say, my request should get some HTML back. That's what I'm expecting to get back. And the content type is application form URL encoded, so it's like sending a form off. if I have some post data that I send through, and I want a response back. Once I've got the response back, I can run an XPath over it, which I had in the other HTML thing as well, and that filters down the data to only the ones that I want to have. And the response object is just post result and the X data in here. So what I can do with this is, as I'm running text HTML as well, under the hood, it will go to the page, load the HTML, send the post data, get the HTML of the resulting form submission, and then run it through HTML tidy as well. So that's the accept text HTML automatically does that for me. So if I scrape a page that has bad HTML, this one is filtered for you as well, so you don't have to worry about that. And then you can use it inside YQL as select star from HTML post where URL is attack date, blah, blah, blah. This is just a demo page that I set up that needs post. Post data is the parameters, and XPath is give me only the piece back. So I can now, in JavaScript, scrape HTML that needs post, which is really, really hard to do if I wanted to do it in Ajax because I have to use my own proxy and so on and so forth. How about OAuth in JavaScript? This is the open table of Netflix that uses the OAuth libraries from Google, and then there's all the fun stuff of OAuth and signs to Netflix.com and gets the data back. So this is something that was not possible without your own proxy, but when you put it inside an execute command, you can do that as well. So switching to other environments liberates our JavaScript solutions and gives us much tighter security. So the browser is actually the main problem in security. JavaScript itself is not really the problem. It's the implementation of JavaScript. But we should stop being annoyed, and we should stop telling people that this is the problem and blame it on JavaScript, but just look around, like, where can we use JavaScript, HTML, and CSS to do something cool? And this is W3C widgets, this is other widget frameworks, this is extensions of the browser, and this is hosted services like YQL or other hosted services that would offer you the same Rhino hosting. You can run Rhino on your server, for example, as well, if you don't want to have any of that. And I'm bitching to the YQL team that we're going to open source YQL as well, so you can host it yourself if you wanted to. But I just love that I can use JavaScript, a language I know and I've been using for years, and I can use it in environments that were never meant for it, and at the same time, I don't have to learn a new skill. It's just APIs. The DOM is an API. It's a terrible API. But other APIs like Geode or Gears, I can use that in JavaScript, and I take the same skill but to take it to the next level. So let's open our minds and don't judge JavaScript by its implementation, but just think about what you can do, and you will hear more of this today, because JavaScript is not the insecure language of the web. It's the implementation of it that holds us back. And as people don't upgrade their browsers, that's not going to change much. So we can shift JavaScript to the server side, do something really cool with that, and find reusable components that way rather than just building little libraries that you put in somewhere. So instead, let's have fun with the JavaScript and use it wisely and don't use it for bells and whistles that we used to have. And with great power comes great responsibility, and this is all I wanted to talk about, so thank you very much. Hello. So we got 10 minutes more. Any questions about this kind of stuff?
Not particularly a question, but more about your slide about browser security. The Firefox.
Where are you?
Sorry, I'll stand up.
Okay.
The Firefox and Safari browsers, obviously, they use open source technologies at their root, and so they tend to have an open development system and report their browser bugs more obviously. Whereas the Opera and IE guys, you know, yeah, so any browser bugs that are found outside, security bugs that are found by outside members will be reported, but the ones that are found by the dev team won't necessarily be reported. So maybe that would...
To a degree. I mean, what Centrix, or whatever the name of the company was, these were just the bugs that were reported to them and what they traced back to what happened. So... Yes, more bugs will be reported. This was not coming from bug triage. That was coming from basically from people saying, like, my site has been hacked, so what happened there? And they found out what happened. So, I mean, it's great that open source allows you to report these things easily and get it fixed as well, but as far as I know, Opera has a way of saying bugs, supporting bugs as well, or reporting bugs.
You can report bugs, but you don't get to see what happens on the inside.
Well, Chris Mills is there. Just beat him up, and he'll be fine. So I was just completely confused by that, because I always I just said that Internet Explorer 6 is now a security bug. It's not a browser anymore. But it's partly true. But it was just amazing to see, like, it shows once again that that pride comes before the fall. So we now have Firefox in our environment here as one of the bigger browsers, and out of a sudden people will abuse that browser and will try to find security holes.
Yeah.
It's the same with what's going to happen with OS X, the same with Ubuntu becomes the main operating system of every school in England, for example. Those things will happen because software inherently is insecure no matter what you try.
Yeah.
And it's great that with open source we can plug it quickly. So that's something that the survey didn't quite mention. But it's a really, really good read. Another thing in the survey which cracked me up was that it talks about, like, information leaking, like what kind of vulnerabilities, for example, in a browser came out because developers talked about it in public.
Yeah.
My favorite was that a white paper of the English military intelligence leaked on WikiLeaks, and the white paper was how to stop information from leaking onto the internet.
Yeah, I saw that.
We had Michael Mayanoff of Ajaxian fame.
You mentioned about YUI embracing Kaha. Just, can you explain a little bit about exactly what it does with that? And also, from actually being a pioneer of Kaha in actual production system, how have you found it in practice? Is it actually eliminating all the risks?
What we've done is we rewrote 2.8.0 to a degree that it actually complies with all the Kaha standards that we need to do. So we didn't change the library in itself. We just cleaned it up, basically. And we did some of the dirty things that we had to do. We had to find other ways around. So in terms of production, what we found with the original Kaha, what came out, it was dead slow. The performance was terrible if you especially do the conversion client side. So we shifted a lot of that to the server side as well and through an API service. And in terms of security flaws, so far our test attack vector libraries so far didn't manage to get anything through. I mean, I will never say that it's 100% secure because everything will be more or less attacked. But at least if you rely on a system like Kaha, there's a single point of fixing it as well, not only a single point of failure. And we see with Facebook right now and with study VZ in Germany that other frameworks that basically don't do anything like that are easily hackable constantly. I mean, there's like 5 different Facebook worms out right now. And, I mean, I think Facebook is on the brink of releasing their stuff more openly as well so people can help fixing their things. That's another thing of open source. It's like if you throw it out there, people will help you fix it. It's early days. What really is annoying about Kaha is that it converts the JavaScript to something different. So if you have a browser bug in the end that you do without the Kaha code, it works fine. With the Kaha code, it doesn't work. So debugging becomes quite a pain. So I think the next thing we should think about is doing a proper Kaha debugger that shows, like, okay, here's the conversion. This is probably what caused the problem. But this is a JavaScript debugging problem all in all as well. It's just, I mean, this has been out for like 3 months or something like that. So we see now. I mean, on Tuesday I'm doing a workshop in the office. On Thursday we're starting a competition with companies that we invited in England to start building applications. So come around and have a play with it.
Hi there. You mentioned four libraries you put up on the screen, jQuery, et cetera, and you were talking a lot about sort of the faux pas that people have made over the years, bad code. What would you say to people who are new to front-end development who maybe have hit jQuery first and find it really easy and they don't necessarily get that contact with the sort of the underlying problems like you mentioned, eval, for example, being a no-no, whereas, of course, jQuery will do that, protect it, and you wouldn't necessarily have that educational element of understanding what happened. What would you say to those people?
It's good that it's easier for people to start being front-end developers. Our environment hasn't changed, though. Browsers are still bastards that lie to you and tell you that things work and they don't work then. So JavaScript libraries get that pain away from you. I think if I start hiring a new person, I want that person to know JavaScript and to know libraries. If somebody says, I'm a jQuery developer, to me, it's not a front-end developer because he uses a tool that he doesn't understand. And that's dangerous in any case. If you know how to build something in a browser, then you actually become a front-end developer. If you then use a library to make it more secure and to make it easier for you to upgrade later on because you don't want to fix your own code when a new browser comes around, then you become a clever front-end developer. But I don't think that any library should replace the knowledge that we have as JavaScript developers. As I showed, JavaScript can be applied anywhere. So it's not like that you're losing out, that you're missing out by just learning JavaScript. It's always been a bit of a problem that people see JavaScript as something that works in the browser, so they do DOM scripting more than JavaScript itself. But as you see right now, you can write JavaScript applications in Air, you can write it in like widget libraries. You can use the proper language, and when you understand the language, to build things that you thought weren't in your reach. And that's a great thing, I consider. I mean, jQuery is a wonderful tool to do really quick stuff, but it's also, I think it's dangerous if you use something that you don't understand. That's like writing a .NET code and then hoping the renderers spit out good HTML. That never worked either.
I mean, I'm sure everyone in this room would completely agree with you. Thanks.
Hey, I was looking at your YQL slides and thing crossed my mind, YQL injection.
YQL injection?
Just like SQL injection?
Yeah, but the thing is, YQL is in the read format, that wouldn't do anything. And YQL is basically it runs through our server first. It doesn't run in the browser. And our server basically does the SQL injection style language. It's not full SQL. YQL is basically a wrapper that we've written that doesn't allow you to do anything SQL does. And, I mean, I don't know the specifics of it, but for example, recursive loops inside YQL. And what it does after 30 seconds of computation on the machine, it times out and sends you an error back and says, like, here's the data that I got in the first 30 seconds, and then I realized something was wrong. So as you don't use it for the end user will never have a way to inject YQL. This is not what it's meant to be. It's for you to make it easier to mash up different services. So if you expect your end users to use to learn YQL, then you probably should be Yahoo and not somebody using YQL.
Okay, I'll give you an example. Make a query to load your images from London, and all of a sudden they, for some reason, load up porn. Because of parameterized queries.
Well, how could they load a porn? They're going through the Flickr API. Well, you get it from the Flickr database. Then Flickr was hacked.
Yeah, no. Supposedly, you can create subqueries and just asking questions. Sorry if it sounds like Glenn Beck. So you are creating a query by concatenating strings, which means that if somebody for some reason finds a global, open global variable which you're using to concatenate your YQL query, supposedly they write some code and all of a sudden instead of selecting from Flickr, it returns images from wherever.
Yeah, but then they have to have their database in their data endpoint in our server. We're not accessing tables here in a database, we're accessing web services. So what YQL does, that HTML table, for example, is code that executes and does a curl call to an HTML page, gets the data back. The Flickr call goes to the Flickr API and does the call with the Flickr API and the authentication for you. You cannot inject into that unless you are authenticated as that Flickr user. So the security that comes with the normal API gets actually wrapped into another call.
Fair enough. I'll have a go at it.
So it's a bit confusing because people that use SQL always think like, yeah, why can't I use everything that SQL is? Why don't you use full SQL? It's just an easier way to mash up web services. This is what it is. And we thought we use a SQL style to make it easy. And then people wanted to have more and more functionality, so we would have the chance to make it as complex as SQL is now. But instead, we just went away and said, like, you know what? If you want to have really complex conversions, use JavaScript in an execute block because you know JavaScript as well and you're done. So this is the other way of doing that.
Hey, just a quick one. I just wondered if there was a conflict between the first part of your talk where you said a lot of security issues were brought in by people just including JavaScript from ad servers, etc., and the second part of your talk where you're saying, look at the cool stuff you can do if you just include a JavaScript from Yahoo servers.
Well, there's a difference because you have control over what you do in the YQL statement. In an ad provider, you don't have. You just get a JavaScript that is a black box that you don't know what it's doing. And we went through several ad server providers, and it's just unbelievable what people do. My favorite was Document Write, no script.
Okay, so you're just saying that the difference is that Yahoo has this guarantee that, well, it's a trust issue. We have to trust Yahoo in the same way as you would.
Well, let's put it this way. If YQL has a problem, all of our new properties are down, and that's more money that we lost that you could pay for, I think. So we have a good stake in keeping this thing up. That's like any great API out there. If you use a web service, make sure that the company that uses that web service is relying on that web service. Then you will have something that you can use. If it's just something that they throw out for fun and laugh and giggles, you probably cannot trust it. Good. Thank you very much again.